Wildea Tausch begins now. We've got Dom Catronio coming up at 11:15 from 620 WTMJ. Tausch will tell us about UW Credit Union coming up because they're spreading good vibes with him and swapping out seats. Brewers game two tonight at AmFam Field between the Brewers and the Cubs. Tausch, you will be there. You are not sitting with Jesse and Up North Joe. You're going with some buddies.
Yes. Yes.
Are you? I know you're excited. I know you're confident. Is there anything that has you nervous?
Yeah.
About games?
Absolutely. There's a bunch of stuff that has me nervous. You know, is Jackson Churio. I would be surprised, and I don't know. You know, I'm sure we'll ask Dom about that. Obviously, he pulled his hamstring in game one, and that's always something you're, you know, concerned about, especially when, what did Pat Murphy say after the game? It was devastating, I think he said. And Jackson came out and said that, you know, it wasn't to that degree. But you're obviously always worried when someone is pulled out of a playoff game. That means you're jittery. And he is such a big part of what Milwaukee does. And then you make a bold move here and go in with Ashby to start. So there's a couple of things that I think you can sit here and be all nervous Nelly if you want, or you could just say, let's go. And you get next man up, and you got your bullpen. You let this thing roll. But tonight, I think, I thought Saturday was critical. And I believe the Brewers win this series because they won game one. And, you know, me and Woody are both on the same page in that because our horse went out, did the job that was asked of him, and he is going to be the catalyst. If Milwaukee's going to win a world championship for the first time, Freddie Peralta is going to be hugely important in getting to that point. And he was on Saturday, and what, if push comes to shove, he would probably be able to go, what, game four, probably, Riles? Does that sound about right?
Riles?
I believe so, yes.
All right.
So, believe it or not, you know, I was curious, so I went to the Brewers website, and there is a very limited number of tickets still available on a face value buy from the team status. You can get a spot in the last row of section 424 for $78.50.
Okay.
You can also sit in section 116, row 21, for $277.50. So there are a handful of seats still available if you are interested in a late addition to your Monday night schedule. I can't guarantee there are any seats available right next to Jesse and Up North Joe. I know those are prime seats that you want to sit next to those guys and discuss Wisconsin geography and other fascinating topics. Tausch, if they don't have, and we will talk to Dom Catronio coming up next. If they don't have Jackson Churio, who I believe was 3-for-3 at the time of his injury in the game?
Yep.
What does that mean? What if it's – he'll be back for the World Series if they advance. What is your concern level then?
Who said that he'd be back if the
– I'm saying that hypothetically. It's a sap.
Oh, that's another sap. You weathered the storm when he missed a bunch of time, I think, in August. And you found ways. But there's a reason guys are, you know, huge parts of your team and are starters and are everyday players because they're better than who else you have. Now, you can catch lightning in a bottle and you could have people go. And there's been plenty of players that have had huge postseasons that didn't have those regular seasons, and they've springboarded. Mark Lemke The old Atlanta Braves second baseman. He had some big.
Yeah.
You could start looking back and find guys that have elevated, but typically when you win a World Championship, it's your best players lead you to it, especially now with three series, having to win three series to get it done. That's typically what this does, and that's why you just hope that if Chorio misses, it's not for an extended period of time.
All right, let's get to Dom on time because he has much more insight than we have. So yes, you have insight on what it means to be a UW Credit Union member and spread the confidence and joy and good vibes at AmFam Field.
For every stage of life, UW Credit Union is here for every you, and I love they have been a great partner of the Milwaukee Brewers. You see their logo down on the field, and you get to see, if you watch that video, every game, somebody up in that fourth deck, sitting up there just pondering, boy, I wonder what it's like down low. And UW Credit Union gets you the tickets, gets you down there. That's great. They do all that great stuff, but also, they do great banking. They keep your banking local, member-first service, great perks like early payday, and at Bucky. How do you say no to Bucky? If you love Wisconsin like I do, you just can't pay with anything else. Fandom will make you do crazy things. Man, this makes sense. Become a UW Credit Union member today. Get your Bucky card like I did. Federally insured by NCUA. Terms and conditions do apply.
Dom Catronio of 620 WTMJ, the flagship of your Milwaukee Brewers, joins us next. It's Wilde and Tausch. We are really lucky because Tausch and I, we know our Packers. I feel like I would put our knowledge up against anyone, and I think we would win, especially with Bulaga in the mix and everything else. Domofsky. But baseball, I know Tausch is a tennis aficionado. I know he fancies himself as an NBA guy, but we're lucky. When it comes to the Bucks, we've got Justin Garcia. Sometimes we get our buddy Eric Name as well. And when it comes to the Brewers, we got Jeff Levering. But this guy has been such a great addition, and I'm glad. I'm not just saying that because he's on the line. I'm glad he's been willing to join us because he makes us way smarter every time he joins us. From 620 WTMJ is Dom Catronio. Dom, good morning, buddy. Thanks for doing this.
I think the listeners don't realize, I had a little, something behind you there just to make sure there's a little something poking you to remind you to say nice things about me as I come onto the show.
No, you do a great job, and you know that, and we know that. Help me understand the Brewers' pitching approach tonight. Our resident baseball expert, Tausch, who's an expert
at
everything.
Were you surprised? I also, help us explain it, but also I think most of us thought, it's easy. Quinn, go. Winning all these games. Can you take us inside what they're doing and why they're doing it?
Well, I kind of called my shot. I had the wrong opener when the roster came out and I saw that Robert Gasser was on the roster. That was my smoke signal to say they're doing an opener. I thought it would be Gasser because I don't know if they want to throw him into a postseason bullpen scenario. And even yet, he still could start game three. Now, all of this is to say, why not start Quinn Priester, given the start he's in the year and everything? The reason is, with the Cubs lineup, they are an everyday lineup that Michael Busch plays every day, and if you can get him to face a lefty as often as you can or get an extra at-bat against a lefty, do it. If you can get PCA to see another lefty, do it. If you can get Kyle Tucker to see another lefty, do it. Ian Happ, switch hitter, but worse from the right side, do it. So the point being, the Brewers are trying to do this the first time through the order. I don't think Ashby was just going to go one inning. I think he could go all the way through. I imagine PCA will probably hit seventh or eighth and then get through PCA, and then Priester would probably enter to follow there, because then if things go according to plan, let's say you're through three innings with Aaron Ashby, then if things go according to plan, Priester can take you to the seventh or eighth inning easily. and then you hand it to Uribe and McGill and Koenig, and all those guys are ready to go.
So the great Pat Tauscher, years and years ago on the farm, suggested that teams should do this, and now it has become a thing. You know, and now I think his theory was nine different pitchers, nine different innings. Is that right? I don't want to misquote
him. The thought process, yeah, rather than paying one starter $45 million a year, you get, you know, flamethrowers that'll give you one or two innings. And you obviously, you saw Freddie on Saturday. There's a balance to this. I think the nine innings, that's cute. I don't know if that's sustainable over the long term, but it definitely has trended that way. You just brought up, you know, with the fact, will the Cubs do any tinkering because of what the Brewers are doing?
Great.
Or they're just going, they're set in their ways, they're doing what they do.
So the conflict becomes, do you start Justin Turner at first, knowing he's going to get one at bat against a lefty, and then immediately pull him as soon as Priester comes in, you put Bush back in. But now you lose roster flexibility. Bush has to play the rest of the game, and now the Brewers have their hand played where you can bring in DL Hall, you can bring in Robert Gasser, you can bring in Jared Koenig against the lefty that can't come out of the game. So this is the mind inside the manager, but to Pat Tausch's thought, the nine innings, nine pitchers, the nerds want that. Like that's a baseball frontier that has been explored. And we all reacted and overreacted to the whole, the starter must go six innings, you know, like the report that was put out by Major League Baseball, and people freaked out. It's like, no, baseball's very aware of the death of the starting pitcher and how important it is to keep this going. I'm in favor of Jason Stark, fantastic writer here in Philadelphia, now does it at large for The Athletic, the double hook rule, where if your starter, like there are parameters, right? Let's say baseline, starter needs to go five innings, or if you're down by more than four runs, you know, there are baselines. But basically, if the starter doesn't go five innings and you pull the starter, you lose the designated hitter, and you have to pinch hit the DH the rest of the game. I'd be all in on that, but I think that's never going to happen.
So, no. Dom, what do you think happens? I know you're out in Philly, but what do you think happens here if Milwaukee, this works tonight? What happens next? How do you think Pat Murphy already knows, or is it contingent on how tonight's game turns out, winning or losing?
Yeah, I think it's contingent on tonight. I really do. I think they're keeping Jose Quintana holstered for a couple of reasons. Number one, he's obviously pitched at Wrigley, and I think they always knew all along they want him to pitch a road game. And we talk about the lefty being a neutralizer for the Cubs lineup. Number two, let's do the worst case scenario. Let's do Murphy's Law. Let's say Ashby gives up three runs in the first, and the Brewers don't come back. Who's to say Quinn Priester has to pitch in this game? You all right? What if you just go full bullpen game, and then you save Quinn Priester for game three? I mean, this is total galaxy brain theory here. But the thought being is there's no reason to show your cards in the postseason. There's literally no reason. So I love the gamesmanship. I love the idea of, well, it could be Quinn. It could be Quintana. It could be Gasser. It could, like, yes, I love this. Bring us his mystery. Bring us a little bit of second guessing and all this stuff. But the way I see it is that, you know, probably cooler heads will prevail. Well, Quintana will probably start game three, and then they'll have a lineup of lefties to follow him too. But I think you don't want to get too cute. But the series never really begins until a road team wins a game. So let's make sure that it's 2-0.
The old George Carl rule. Jackson Chourio, obviously there's a lot of concern. Be very skeptical. What's your hunch on that? And then who needs to elevate their game if he can't go?
Hunch is he sits out tonight. That's just what I would do.
Yep.
Because off day yesterday, you get three straight days off. You take the step back today to make sure you're not taking another step back later in October. That's what I would do. Now, Jackson is 21 years young, and 21-year-olds heal fast, and he's going to do everything in his power to walk into Murph's office today and be like, put me in there. And, you know, he kind of got to save him from himself sort of thing. I would rest him. As far as who's going to step up behind him, I'd expect Isaac Collins to start. I'd be shocked if it's Brandon Lockridge. The way Isaac finished the year was disappointing in his standards, given rookie of the year candidate for 4 months out of the six this year. But really faltered late. Defense wasn't as good as it was earlier in the season. But, you know, legends are made in October. Nobody cares what you did in the regular season anymore. And look at Blake Perkins, man. I mean, one of that bat yesterday. You just never know. Joey Ortiz drawing 2 4-pitch walks. Like, you just never know what's going to happen in October. Maybe Isaac can get things going in the right direction tonight if he starts in left field.
That's someone's Steinhoffel sleeper of the week in our little competition for this series. So hopefully he has a huge game on my behalf. Dom, make us smarter like you usually do. What are the other pieces of game this game two matchup that you as a baseball guy will have your eye on that me as a football guy wouldn't be smart enough to have my eye on and will because you told me to?
Shota gives up bombs. I know you see, you know, the numbers head-to-head against the Brewers, that he's been better this year than he was last year. But he's still giving, I want to say, like the third most homers in all of baseball. And that's hard to do at Wrigley, given the wind's blowing in half the year. So the way I see it is all this talk about the home runs and, oh, you got to out-homer your opponent. You got to do... Okay, the Cubs out-homered the Brewers yesterday 3-0. They were all solo shots. The Brewers out-homered the Mets in the wild card series last year 5-1. Look how that turned out. Mm-hmm. Home runs are important. I'm never going to turn down home runs. But if you suddenly throw in this offense hitting homers on top of what they did in game one, that's what makes this team not only a pennant contender, but a World Series contender. Look what the Blue Jays have done. Yes, they hit a grand slam with Vlad Jr., but they were kept on hitting. Like, mm-hmm. These two offenses are on a crash course of how to do it in the postseason.
What did you think of, like, look, I still, Jesse has very strong feelings about Craig Counsell. I can't feel as strongly as he does. But he seemed rattled and... everyone in the entire organization was okay with the pitching decision. What do you kind of make of if there was a Dom for the Cubs, what is he trying to tell Cubs fans? Because I watched that and thought, this team looks, these guys look shook after what happened in game one. Am I wrong to think that way?
No, you're not wrong at all. The way I saw it was, when I saw that Matthew Boyd was going to start game one, I thought this was going to be Counsell a la 2018. Boyd starts for 3 batters and brings in a righty. I really thought that was going to happen, like the Wade Miley NLCS against the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. And it didn't. So I knew he only threw 60-some pitches in game one, but you look at those numbers in the second half for Boyd, and the whole organization line, I'm like, I'm really surprised you went there and just didn't just wear it. Like, I wouldn't have done it. Like, I would not have started Matthew Boyd. I would have started Colin Ray and then see where you're at. But, hey, I'm not the manager. I'm not the second highest paid manager in baseball. So the point being, for if I was the Dom of the Cubs, is, hey, you played your most uncharacteristic game. I mean, the Nico Horner error was the play that lost the game for them. Not the big six run, not the coming back, not the whole, like, Nico Horner, your Gold Glove second baseman, he's going to steal the Gold Glove from Bryce Strang this year. He has been phenomenal at second base. That error lost them the game. So you're like, okay, that's not going to happen again. You hit 3 home runs. Cool, that's not going to happen again. Or it's like, they got to see Jared Koenig, all right? So they had some small victories, and they only needed to use 3 non-leveraged relievers, right? Soroka, Savali, who pitched great, and Ben Brown. Those guys are not going to pitch with the lead the rest of this series. So it worked out from the Cubs' favor from saving their bullpen.
All right, so last thing for me. As a baseball guy, you obviously watch way more than I do, but I have to admit, I have pretty much all the playoff games on now when I'm writing my Packers stories or just on in the background. I find myself stopping and watching an inning, which I would have never done in like the middle of June. What is it about October baseball. Like, it's just like every pitch there's like implications to. Like, I would say, and I cover the NFL for a long time, but the postseason for baseball, after 162 games plus all the spring training, it's a pretty damn good crescendo, I have to admit. What is it about postseason baseball?
Yeah. People always ask, why do these guys celebrate so hard between every round? They haven't won anything yet. These guys have been together since February 14th, okay? They are sick of each other. And you are in this marathon together. And the reason why October baseball is so intoxicating is that the Brewers are a team that we have seen them kind of touch the sun and live to tell the tale. And you're hoping they can do it again. Like, oh, what if they just time it up right? And, you know, every pitch to pitch, right? I mean, I've said this quote a few times now. I'll say it again. A player told me when we were talking about, like, yeah, in the playoffs, everything matters. A walk is a rally. And he said, no. A walk isn't a rally. A 2-0 count is a rally. It just changes everything. It's like you're in a tie game in the fourth quarter and every play is third down and five. Like, it is just so much fun that there is so much stress and weight on every single pitch. How intoxicating was Tigers Mariners last night?
Yes!
Tarek Skubal, best pitcher on the planet, and then gives up two homers to Polanco, and then they blow it in the eighth, but then they come back in the bottom half. Like, that is baseball, October baseball to a T. Yesterday, or game one, Teoscar Hernandez fails to cut off a ball in right center field, then he hits the go-ahead three-run bomb. Like, sign me up for all of this injected into my veins.
All right, Dom, we appreciate you always making time for us. I can guarantee you we will be bothering you again
and again.
We know you got a lot on your plate, so thanks for making time for us. We'll talk to you again soon.
The sooner the Brewers can clinch the NLCS, my life gets a lot easier. Thanks, guys.
From 620 WTMJ, that's our buddy Dom Catronio. We are
you
always
know what else I love?
To talk to him.
I love this whole roof. Shifting the roof to get sun glaring into the cubbies, and you know tonight it might rain, and I don't know if they're going to do night. The roof, there's storylines, and you asked why you're so intoxicated by it, and I thought Dom gave a great answer. It's third and five in the fourth quarter.
That's
all
a great
the time
line.
Because everything matters. Great line. It is just a pressure cooker where everything. He said Horner made the air. Doesn't make errors. That pressure. We all want to see these athletes that have been doing it for 162 who can respond and handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why we're all so intoxicated by it. And when it's a team that you watch and you care about and you see, it's you're even that much more invested in it. So it's just it's that's why, to answer your question, why everybody is so intoxicated. You just there's not a lot of things that get you to that point.
You're right.
In sports. Sunday at the Masters, you know, if you have a golfer that you like. NBA, when do you get that? Maybe late in the fourth quarter? You're not feeling that way in the second quarter.
NHL overtime games.
Overtime.
In the playoffs.
Yep. But every game is every inning is an overtime. Because
that
Cubs Brewers game was done after two because you knocked it.
Right.
Yankees, Blue Jays, same thing.
Right. Hope that continues. All right. They moved up the locker room. I'm going to get out of here and get over to Lambeau Field so I can talk to Christian Watson, who has been had his window open for practicing. A few other guys I want to get to. I want to talk about turnovers and takeaways and their lack thereof.
Ooh, are we doing last-minute trivia today, Riles? Are we going to do last segment
trivia? No, we're doing double trivia later in the week trivia.
So
you and Riles are going to take it home. I'm going to head to Lambeau Field. More Wilde and Tausch, or Yauch and Tausch, next. So stick around.
I say, hey, I'll be gone in there, but I'll be back from around the way. It seems like everywhere I go, the more I see, the less I know.
On
Riley and Tausch now, or Riles and Tausch, Yauch and Tausch. I think Riley and Tausch has the best ring.
I actually like Yauch and Tausch.
Yauch and Tausch?
Yauch Tausch. Yeah. Good,
Is Tauscher, what ethnicity is that? Is that German?
There's some Bohemian, a little German.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was wondering, because Yauch is German, Tausch, like, it's got a similar, that sort of aggressive sound to it. So, just wondering.
Yeah,
but,
we put an S in there to just kind of soften it a little bit.
Okay.
Tausch and Yauch.
Tausch and
That'd
Yauch.
Be a whole different thing.
Well, without further ado, it's time to get into some Woe Riley.
Is good. The guys discuss.
Just the other morning, I had breakfast at Tracy Rocker's house. His mama brought out 15 flapjacks. He said, "Mama, take back 5 of them flapjacks. I gotta stay hungry for the Crimson Tide."
But if it's not, the show must go on. It's time for
Whoa, Nelly
on Wildy and Tausch.
All right, Tausch, let me paint the picture for you. So, Saturday, I'm at the Silver Eagle in Monona. Fine establishment. Excellent sports bar. We're going there for Wisconsin College Game Day postgame show. Myself and Corey Sparks. My friend.
They still got the shuffleboards in there, right?
I didn't see any shuffleboard. Not inside shuffleboard, no.
Oh.
I don't believe so.
Yeah, I always thought they had shuffleboards.
Yeah, lots of tables, right. Lots of televisions, but my friend is also there. He wanted to sit and listen to what I had to say, myself and Corey Sparks, and then also watch the Brewers-Cubs games. He's a Cubs fan. So he's sitting down, me, Corey, and my buddy, Oscar, are talking at the bar, watching the Brewers game start, watching the end of the Badgers game. Then Michael Busch hits the home run. He's going crazy. Brewers start storming back. We're going crazy. And then Blake Perkins comes to the plate, has his 11-pitch at-bat, rips the single. Brewers are up 4-1. I walked into the bar with just my Badgers gear on. I'm hosting a Badgers show, wearing Badgers. But I brought a Blake Perkins jersey that I own to put on. Thank you. So after Blake Perkins gets the big RBI after a great at-bat, I put on the Blake Perkins jersey. And then another fan at the bar, a Brewers fan, starts yelling at me like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa. You need to come into the bar wearing your Brewers stuff. You're a bandwagon. You can't be putting it on after the game start, after the Brewers come back and start playing. Well, you can't be doing that." And I was like, "What? Blake Perkins just had a great at-bat, so I'm putting the jersey on. I'm talking Badgers. I'm wearing bold." And he's like, "Nope, it's not how it works." So, in your opinion, if you're going to the bar, you have two teams on, do you have to be wearing both going in? Or is it fair, foul? Is it fair to put on the Brewers jersey after they start doing well? Or is it bandwagon?
So I would say this. You kind of threw me under the bus when I gave you an opportunity to support me when I was battling with Jason about the 1982 or the 1962 Junction Boys water. You can wear what you want. The fact that you're wearing Badger gear as the Badgers are struggling is fantastic. You're hosting the show. You're there for work. And who but a real true blue Brewers fan is going to have a second thing to wear? Bandwagon people aren't doing that. Bandwagon people are all in on the Brewers, and they're leaving their Badger gear at home. So whoever was telling you this isn't understanding the big picture. They're not looking at this. The Badger game was going to end before the Brewer game.
Mm-hmm.
You're rocking the Badger gear, even though we just have had a couple of real disappointing weeks. And that game, unfortunately, didn't turn our way either.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're not bringing a Robin Yount or a Paul Molitor or a Christian Yelich jersey out. You got Perk. So this guy or gal, whoever was giving you grief, nah. I'm on Team Riley on this. I think you did everything right.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate you not going eye for an eye and throwing me under the bus. I appreciate that.
I have to be honest about stuff.
Yeah. Because I responded to him at one point with what bandwagon fan has a Blake Perkins jersey in their backpack?
Great question.
And he didn't have an answer for that. So that was my take. Appreciate your support.
Whoa, Nelly!
Now, Tausch, you tweeted out something about field goals. And maybe being too easy. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes, I think it was, who made the 53? Was it the, obviously New England's kicker made a big kick yesterday. Denver's kicker made a big kick to go up four. There were a lot of, we've seen this now before. The Browns kicker makes the game winner against the G&G a couple weeks ago. And I'm kind of over it. I'm over the fact that everybody's panicking that Aubrey can make 70-yard field goals. That's not how the game of football is intended to be played. Now, they've gotten better. I would say this. There was a time, 1991, I believe, Whitney Houston blaring the national anthem during a war. It was Scott Norwood, I think, barely got a 47. He pushed it right, but it barely got there. Now these cats are kicking 60-yarders, and they're good from 75. This is not how whoever invented football, this is not what we were looking for.
Well, whoever
I have two options here.
Okay, I'll let you finish.
I got two options to solve this. It's too easy to make kicks. It is too easy. We either need to narrow the goalpost, which I am totally on board with.
Okay.
And it won't be that hard. I don't know how far you want to bring it in, but you want to make it. I love the fact it's penal if you miss and you get the ball spotted at where they spotted it for the kick. Or, and this is where I think, and I hadn't even thought of this, no more K-balls. You kick what your quarterback was just throwing. Let's be done with that. You get to doctor up the K-balls. You get them all pretty and shiny and whatever you want to do. Dunzo, you're kicking. If that ball just slopped in the mud, you're kicking a mud ball.
Wait.
We'll dry it off for you, but no, we're done with K-balls. I want them out.
Okay, maybe I might show my youth being a casual fan here. I didn't know. So they swap out the balls for kicking? It's not the same football?
Yes. That is correct.
Okay. So every time you line up for a field goal, it's a fresh football with, I'm assuming, more tack on it than the one that's dirtied up.
Yes.
Okay. That's fascinating. I didn't know that. But push back on your first topic that this isn't how football is meant to be played. Whoever invented football, I don't think envisioned the forward pass. I think they'd hate football nowadays. They'd probably say it was weak and soft.
Well,
it's flinging the ball
around.
They
wouldn't make... Let me tell you something. They wouldn't think it was weak when they're getting royalty checks for inventing football. Yeah.
Fair enough.
So it's just, here's the deal. I think kicking has gotten too easy. That is not what, it's just not what football should be. We shouldn't be having guys kicking 68-yard field goals and being like, oh, yeah, that's just part of the deal.
But isn't there something
either
to be said?
Go back.
Isn't there something to be said for, like, excellence, though, in your craft? Like, kickers just getting better and better and learning how... Because it doesn't look like kickers have gotten much bigger. Like,
yeah,
they're figuring
out the
mechanics.
You kick the normal football. Just like I would say in golf, let's go back to the old golf ball. Let's stop juicing all these things up. Because are they really getting better? You know, like Ben Hogan would drive the golf ball a ton if he's using this equipment and stuff? Of course they would. So, no. It's not as all these kickers are so much better. Yeah, they're better. But let's give them an old slop ball and see how they're doing.
Is that how it used to?
It's just too easy now. So I want to change it. And if you're kicking slop balls, 60 yards, I'm great with it. But I don't want it fresh and clean. No.
Okay.
One or the other.
So when you...
They will do something to change this.
When you played, were they kicking slop balls? Or was it still K-balls, as you called them?
At some point in my career, K-balls came into play.
Okay.
And the kicking, I'm going to say this.
I was just going to ask, was that a big deal at the time, or did that just kind of like slowly, that just happened? Or was this like a big deal like the NFL introduced it?
Riley, I ain't going to lie to you. I didn't have time to worry about all that.
Okay.
Now I do, and I can sit here and tell you that this should happen. I just was worrying about blocking people and trying to make a living. So
okay.
I wasn't worried about K-balls and anything else. I just knew when we lined up, we weren't going to attempt anything over 55, 56 yards. Now these kids are kicking 70 yards. Come on. So I wanted to – we'll see if it happens. I would bet the NFL Competition Committee will do something. I don't know what it's going to be, but I would bet something changes in the next the next offseason.
All right.
Whoa, Riley.
Whoa, Nelly.
Last thing I got for you, Tausch. I don't know. Did you tune in to the Panthers-Dolphins game yesterday? Did you happen to see any of the discourse on Twitter surrounding the commentator of said game?
No.
All right. Well, his name's Eric Collins. He does the play-by-play broadcast for the Charlotte Hornets. He did the Badgers Middle Tennessee game earlier this year. Here's a snippet of what the Panthers-Dolphins game sounded like yesterday.
Tagovailoa has Waddle. He's open. Touchdown. And Donald, look at him. What kind of speed do you get, young man? To the end zone. Achane. Did he? He did. Look at this. Donald still on his feet. Caught back in the end zone. Xavier Leggett.
All right, I feel like that's a good taste of Eric Collins
on
the call.
That's a little snapshot.
Yeah, so
I love it.
Okay, that was going to be my question.
So I think that you can overdo things. Part of the greatness of great announcers is knowing the moment and then being able to paint that picture. Or the thing that I can't stand, and I got after Bob Costas, and I think people got after Al Michaels, is some of these guys – I think you've done it so long that you don't still have that excitement when a big moment comes. Like fans, I think almost every fan would love to do these jobs because they think they're good at it. But you want to feel the excitement of what's going on. And if you as an announcer don't have that, you're probably in the wrong spot. So this cat is obviously he's enthused, he's excited about this opportunity, and he wants you to make sure to know when big plays happen, he is just as excited as you are, and I think that's a good thing when it comes to announcing.
Okay, I would agree. I love listening to Eric Collins. I don't know if you went and watched any of the highlights of Middle Tennessee
with Phil better.
On video.
I think Phil's better.
Okay, Phil.
Phil Collins.
Phil Collins? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I'll bump back with some Phil Collins. But I love he has a call like on Tretch's long run. He's like, Kakahuna! Touchdown! He's just going nuts, exactly like he did there. So I love Eric
Sounds
Collins.
Sounds like the youngster on that Prep Mania game coming up this week.
Yeah, may have to. Milton Redhawks, Sun Prairie East Cardinals coming up this Friday. Going to be a good one. Make sure to tune in. That's it for Woe Riley. We wrap up the show next. This is Wilde and Tausch. Little Phil Collins playing us out on this Monday edition of
Did you think for a minute Phil Collins was a Brewers baseball player?
No, I thought you – I don't know why you said Phil, and I was like, is he talking about Phil Sims, the broadcaster, former quarterback of the Giants? That was my first thought. It took me longer than I would like to get to Phil Collins. But the Brewers taking on the Cubs tonight in Game 2 of the NLDS. Tausch, what's your game day look like? You're going to a Brewers game. What is your evening going to look like?
So I will head down to Milwaukee probably earlier. I'm going to meet up with the guys that are going to the game probably around, 5:30, and then try to get over there 6:37-ish, get an hour and a half hour and 8 minutes of little lead-in time. I was unable to obviously go Saturday. I love playoff baseball. I love going to Brewers games. But like Dom said, there's just something – it's unique. And to be in that environment, I cannot wait to get down to AmFam Field.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait to watch the game tonight. I'm on pins and needles. I'm excited. So Brewers Cubs tonight, NLDS game 2. You can listen right here on 100.5 ESPN. Pregame coverage begins at 7:30. Thank you, Tausch, for letting me fill in. Been a fantastic show today. Jason, Tausch, and I believe Jesse will be back tomorrow for the Tuesday edition of Wilde and Tausch. In the words of one Jason Wilde, thanks for coming along. Take care, be good.